This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Had I not made the active choice to pivot, if I hadn't, you know, applied this shift framework to my own life, my marriage would have ended 4 years ago, guaranteed. My experience as a parent would have suffered. It did massively. And I wholeheartedly am confident that I would have gotten to this point eventually. But, and how much harm would I have caused in that process? And how much of that would have been irreparable?
Welcome to Shift Talking, a podcast where we explore the art and science of behavior change. I'm your host, Davina Hain, a mental health coach and founder of A Steady Space. Join me as we discuss actionable tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you create lasting change once and for all. Now, let's get to the Shift Talking. Hi, 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 and welcome back to Shift Talking. Today is episode 23, and it's all about how to repair after conflict. If you haven't listened to the 3 episodes before this, I strongly suggest you do because this is an unofficial 4-part series around these topics. Episode 20, about how to prevent conflict. 21, about how to start voicing complaints without them flaring up. 22, about once they do inevitably flare up, how we can kind of reduce them a little bit, and then today about repairing after things get wild. Today's going to be kind of segmented between when we're doing this with other adults, whether it's our partner, our family member, our friend, our coworker, and then we will go into with our children, both our young children and elder, right? Whether it's teen or grown adult children, there likely won't be a lot of variation between there other than the type of language we use. So let's jump right in. Like it or not, conflict is a very natural part of human relationships. And what happens after is actually what matters the most. Sometimes things get wild, we get hot, and we say things that we regret. And then what do we do about them? Whether it's with a partner, family member, coworker, or child, effective repair determines whether our relationships grow stronger or erode over time. And research is confirming this. So unresolved conflict is the top reason for divorce. 57.7% of couples cite constant arguing as their actual reason for separation. And 22% of first marriages dissolve within just 5 years. And this is because of lingering unresolved issues. And then if we take in the workplace, unresolved tension leads to productivity losses of up to $359 billion a year due to employee disengagement. And when handled well, conflict doesn't weaken relationships. It actually strengthens our trust, our emotional resilience, and our connection overall, no matter who this is with. I will always suggest to repair or even over-repair so that we can ensure that moving forward, neither one of us is still really holding on to anything. We give each other the room and the space to address it as we need to, give it that time in real time that it needs, that it requires, that it's begging for, that it's demanding. So later on, we don't find ourselves constantly having the same argument over and over again, disguised as other ones because nothing changed. So when we're wanting to resolve conflict with other adults, we have to first recognize common barriers. So oftentimes it is avoidance. We pretend it didn't happen. We brush it under the rug. It's uncomfortable. We have the flare up and then we kind of just pretend nothing happened. What that then leads to is some level of silent resentment.
It's holding on to that anger without the resolution. It is feeling as if they are getting away with something. They are you know, evading me. They're not respecting me. There's so many deeper layers to this. Another aspect is going to be when we just get those surface level apologies, right? Where they just say sorry without any sort of change. They say sorry just to placate, just to get it done with and make you feel like you're a nuisance. Also, we may find the other person to be a nuisance, which is why we will say surface level sorries just to get it over with. I am so deeply uncomfortable in this, no matter how I'm viewing the other person. I don't want to do this at all. And so, okay, that's fine. I'll take one on the chin. I will say sorry just so that we can move on and I can get out of this discomfort. And then what I have found to be one of the biggest struggles in making repair is the power struggle within accountability. That many of us can find taking accountability as losing. We genuinely view it like the argument is either won or lost. And if I am the one who has to take accountability, if I am the one who has to go to you to repair, if I am the one who has to apologize and make amends, then I fundamentally lose. And that's really gross. That can actually be deeply, viscerally humiliating for so many of us. So we have to recognize these barriers and work through them as opposed to ignoring them and trying to get past them. What the research is showing us is that effective conflict resolution in relationships can predict long-term success more than any other factor. You guys, it's not about money, fidelity, these types of things. It is about the way that we communicate with each other. The number one relationship killer tends to be apathy by the end of it, right? We just kind of stop caring. We stop feeling like I have the energy to argue, to beg you to give a shit, to beg you not to give a shit, to just get through. And when it comes to apathy and this feeling of just being done, right? Like I'm just numbed out within this relationship, this friendship, this job, this is going to be how we get there. It is by not effectively repairing after our fights happen. Within the workplace, organizations with strong conflict resolution practices see 30% higher employee retention and their productivity, right? If you're spending 40 plus hours of your week in an environment where you feel trapped, where you feel as if you don't have control, you are required to be there based on, of course, the necessity of money, you are going to go down that resentment loophole so much faster. But if you actually work through this, if your company, if your business, if you as the business owner can implement strong conflict resolution practices, you will see a third of the time things will get better much faster. Your employees won't be turning over as often, and you will get more done, which is the point. So let's apply the SHIFT framework for repairing adult relationships. First is our self-awareness, recognizing your role in this conflict. We have to be able to pause and identify our emotions. When we play the tape back from the conflict, what was coming up for me? If you aren't quite sure, if you cannot label 3 to 5 things that were coming up for you, that is where we have to go back and work on our affect labeling. Actually learn the definitions for this vocabulary to be able to become more emotionally literate. And that way I can describe more of my experience, not only to other people, but to myself. How often are you feeling a type of way and you just can't quite pinpoint it? This happens to so many of us if we don't know what's actually bothering me. So first, we name it to tame it. We identify what our emotions are, what came up in me, and then we can determine the where and the why and how. We have to recognize what our part is in it. In last episode where we talked about how to come back after taking a pause, right, taking a break during our conflict, we come back and we take accountability. Any accountability, the slightest little bit of like, I scoffed and that wasn't kind, right? Any small thing is what we want to be able to recognize. What were my emotions when that came up? What did I do about them that was poor? Our studies on emotional intelligence are showing that people who own their part in conflict are perceived by others as more trustworthy and competent in relationships across the board, no matter which one it is. You have been there.
You have seen someone dig their heels in, stay so stubborn, so unwilling to see their part in something, and I'd imagine you have looked at them in the same way that a lot of us do, which is like, ugh, right? Like, it's not attractive. I don't quite respect it. There's a lot there that's really hard to tolerate when you're watching someone who is so obviously, blatantly in the wrong to any degree, and they fight it. That is not what I want for you. That is not going to allow for other people to find you to be trustworthy, to find you to be competent, to find you to be somebody worth repairing with, somebody worth forgiving. Our H is our healing. We're moving from blame to resolution. We don't just look for ways to make the other person the problem. We work to heal parts of us that does fundamentally view this as losing, who views the words, "I'm sorry," as utterly humiliating and small and gross. We acknowledge where these things come from, and then we do something different with them. Just because this is the way that you've always been doesn't mean that you cannot change that. This is the point, you guys. Within this healing is going to be the actual apologizing part. You can take accountability within yourself, right, of ways that you acted outside of yourself. And that's, you know, not very cute. It's not something I'm proud of. I'm feeling a bit guilty, a bit shameful. And how can I pivot that energy into behavior change as opposed to this self-deprecating doom loop that we oftentimes find ourselves within? And what most apologies need is three parts. We need an acknowledgement of the harm done, taking accountability of the fact that I was the one who caused that harm, and then an action. How am I going to do anything differently in the future? Within marriage, the Gottman Institute, these relationship gods, if you haven't heard of them yet, they have found that couples who effectively repair conflicts stay together 80% more often than those who don't. Right? And a lot of this, I'd imagine, feels quite obvious. Right? If people can't get along, if they can't work through their conflict, then where's the longevity in that? How are we going to actually be able to sustain any of this? And 80% of the time, you can't. You don't. And what I see so often in my practice and within my personal life and, you know, everywhere is this attempt at just pushing through. Until we have so much baggage, we have so many wounds that they're all bleeding onto other ones. It can feel like it's impossible for us to actually repair one topic without just snowballing into all of these other topics that went unrepaired. And that's exactly what happens. That's why these things build up over time and why I, of course, am here suggesting that we do something along the way. And this is what I want you to start doing is just taking accountability for these really small things, right? If the bigs are too big, and I get that, trust me, I have been such a deeply self-deprecating, stubborn, defensive, emotionally driven person in my life for the vast majority of my life. And I see that in myself now. And had I not made the active choice to pivot, if I hadn't, you know, applied this shift framework to my own life, my marriage would have ended 4 years ago, guaranteed. My experience as a parent would have suffered. It did massively. And I wholeheartedly am confident that I would have gotten to this point eventually. But, and how much harm would I have caused in that process? And how much of that would have been irreparable? So this is what we do. We start innovating. Right? We move into our I. We adapt how we communicate and what we do about it. And we start with the small things. We go back to that script in episode 21 about how to bring up topics that upset us, how to bring up complaints with other people without causing flare-ups, right? With the best possibility of not causing a flare-up. And this is what we do. We go back to that script. You will find it on my website, linked in the show notes, per usual. You can go there, you can download this assertive Mad Libs is what I call them. They can also be used when we are working toward repair. We need to know, what do we need to feel to be heard? What does the person I'm speaking to need to feel? And typically, all they really need to do is to know that you give a shit.
they need to know that their upset isn't just such an inconvenience to you, that you care enough to learn about how they've been impacted and then do something about it. Oftentimes, we see such a level of dismissiveness that makes the other person just shut down, because what's the point? If I don't think you actually care to hear how I'm affected, if your body language, your defensiveness, your tonality, your presentation shows me that you just could not care less, then I am not going to sit there and want to repair with you. I'm going to be holding you, what, emotionally hostage while I just talk at you and you just tune out. You try to get away from it. You try to just distract yourself. You try not to actually hold space. So we have to start with just caring. The innovation in communication isn't just about the words we say. It is innovation everywhere. It is innovation about the thought processes that I have, the narrative that I have of my partner, the way that I address these narratives, the language, the volume, the body language, the tone, the intensity, everything that I do has to come down to this innovation. You are not going to be able to get to the relationships that you want, no matter what category they fall within, if you continue doing the same thing. With the same mindset, with the same approach, you will get the same outcome. Guaranteed. That is where we start. We work on how to hold space. We work on giving them the benefit of the doubt without them having to fucking beg you for it. And when it does come to the workplace, what we know is that collaborative conflict resolution can reduce disputes by 60%. 60% fewer disputes. We have to recognize how much our communication affects these things, and it's going to start with the way that I view them. The words, as mentioned in last episode, don't quite matter as much. I place a lot of emphasis because the language is going to matter, because if I can match my body language, my tone, my intensity, my volume to that language, it's of course going to make more sense, right? It's going to land harder. It will be more impactful. And if all of those other things aren't adjusting and you're just regurgitating a script, 7% of that entire conversation is all that matters, right? It's only going to affect 7%. 7% is about the actual words we say. 93% is about everything else. Innovate all of it, you guys. And it's only going to come from the self-awareness of recognizing that maybe I did fuck up a little bit, and maybe I can take accountability for that one little bit as opposed to the entire conflict overall. And then we heal through that, and then we innovate. And then we get into this point of fortitude. We break the pattern of unresolved conflict. So instead of avoiding hard conversations, we set a structured repair time, right? We work on how to approach these things in better ways that actually gives me evidence that going through this, having these conversations after the fact instead of just ignoring them, actually does benefit me. And so far, if you're anything like I was before I did this work, I had way more evidence to tell me not to do this, of our attempts at repair just creating more and more conflict, that now it's like, fuck it, forget it. If we can just brush past it, please, I'm over it. And again, it's not about the topic. It's about our confidence in our ability to navigate it effectively. And that's what we get to do here. And ultimately, we get to this point of transformation, strengthening the relationship through repair. A conflict that is well handled deepens our intimacy, our emotional intimacy, our sexual intimacy, our physical intimacy. All of these things are going to benefit greatly from this. Long-term avoidance leads to relationship dissatisfaction 95% of the time. If we can get to this ultimate part of transformation, we get to see, we choose to see conflict as an opportunity for connection rather than a threat, right? We can shift the relationship from transactional to transformational. That's what we're looking for. That's why we're doing this in the first place. Okay, moving on to repairing conflict with our children. Children process conflict differently than we do. And repair isn't just about apologizing. It's about teaching them that emotional intelligence and safety in relationships. They don't have the words, you guys. How many of us do as grown adults, right? We don't oftentimes have the words for what it is that we're feeling. How can we expect these little humans who don't even have their frontal lobe developed yet to be able to do what we aren't even able to. We can't. And this is why you will hear me say over and over again that kids don't need perfect parents. That doesn't exist. They just need parents who will model how to handle mistakes, how to make mistakes, which obviously all of us pretty much know how to do really well, and how to repair them afterward, what to do about it after I make a mistake. Here's the thing. Many of us grew up in a household that was one of a couple different categories. One where we had high conflict and then we just acted like nothing happened. Maybe we used the silent treatment, or we just kept such a distance that then we felt like it blew over and then we get to just kind of move right past it. Another one is that we had no conflict and we then don't know how to handle it at all. A lot of parents are so fearful of showing conflict in front of their kids. And so they either A, go behind closed doors and forget that, you know, kids can still hear us through doors and walls and windows, or they just don't allow the kids any exposure to conflict at all, which then means they will have no idea how to do it. With the best of intentions comes the most negative, harmful impacts. Because in our attempt to protect and shield our children from conflict, we then reduce their ability. We almost rob them of the opportunity to learn how to do this effectively. The other part is, rather than just taking the silent treatment in between, you may have repaired in private, but you aren't repairing as loudly as you had conflict, right? And so if they just hear the conflict and then later on they see you lovey-dovey, they won't know how you got there. And they might just assume that, oh, okay, they just kept moving through it. I don't have the language or the experience to know that there's an alternative. So this is how most of our kids are going to handle these things. They're just observing. We think that they have a narrative of this actual thought process, right? Like this actual verbalized wording, but they don't. They just have the experiences. So unless we help them understand the narrative, the language to use, they won't know how to. And then they will grow up to be emotionally dumb adults. We have no choice. You will hear me time and time again compare emotional literacy to intellectual literacy of being able to read and write. It is the same thing here. It's a whole new language. And we have to know how to sound these things out, how to identify them, how to string these words together in a way that feels accurate for me. And I'm telling you, you are preventing your children from an adulthood that you're attempting to give them by not showing them conflict and how to repair. What happens with our teenagers is that they will act indifferent. They will ignore it if you let them, right? And you're probably hoping that they will, or wanting to create as much quote unquote normalcy as possible. But it's not 10-second Tom, you guys. They're not going to forget these things. They're just going to be more and more confused and view you as somebody who is unsafe, unpredictable, and not knowledgeable in how to go through this. What we often see is that our teens end up losing respect for us over time because you were this person that taught them everything that they looked up to so deeply, so strongly, and now you aren't guiding them anymore. You're not showing them how to do this properly. And our children need mentorship. They need this coaching. And if we aren't doing it for ourselves, how do we expect to be able to give it to them? And if you don't show them this, the world will, and probably not in the best of ways. So just because they act indifferent doesn't mean that they don't care deeper. They care way more than they will ever show. Our ability to repair our relationships is going to build that emotional trust. It's going to lead to stronger parent-child relationships in adulthood. And so while I've spent more time, of course, focusing on parental conflict that the child is just witnessing, we also have to talk about the fact that parents and children will get into probably way more conflict, right? I'm arguing and going back and forth with my kids dozens of times a day. And then we hear, well, kids are resilient. They'll bounce back. Assuming that they forget when we mess up, but they don't. It's the belief that they should respect me regardless, as if true, genuine respect is demanded instead of earned. And within this power struggle of, oh, they're just little humans, I shouldn't have to apologize to them. Why not? Were you apologized to as a kid? Honest question. Were you apologized to by your parents as a kid? And if the answer is no, I want to know, and I want you to ask yourself whether you would have benefited from that, whether that could have changed your entire existence in some ways, whether that would have healed wounds for you. And if I didn't get it, and I know that I would have benefited from it, why would I withhold that from my children? This is why I've created the parental shift, you guys, because this is not something that I just inherently knew how to do. I happened to choose a career that I was able and fortunate enough to see through within my education and getting my master's and then these subsequent certifications. I have this luxury of living and breathing this content, and I still mess up so often. Like, I am illiterate in very many other categories. It's wild how illiterate I am. And I happen to go into this one. You happen to choose a different career. And this is why the parental shift exists, so that we can all come together, learn from each other, feel like we have community, and not only feel it, but know that we have community in one another. And then we get to adopt these skills and tools together. We can trial and error. We have people to go to. Almost always when we start doing this work, and this was my experience as well, the most amount of friction and pushback that I got was from the people closest to me. Because again, they've been conditioned to expect a type of version from me, right? They're expecting the Divina that I've always been. And so when I changed that, when I worked to evolve that, all they saw was a difference, and anything unknown is scary, and therefore there was resistance. What we need is a community around us of people who are also doing the same work to bounce ideas off of, to get that reassurance from, to feel as if I have support here, especially when I will not likely be supported by the others in my family unless they're also doing this work, unless my friends are also doing this work. My coworkers are also doing this work. This is so important, you guys. And here is why we have the parental shift. So let's go into the shift framework for repairing with our kids. Our S, of course, is our self-awareness. It's recognizing our emotional impact on our children. Kids do not always have the words to express how it affects them. And kids whose parents model repair grow up with stronger emotional intelligence and conflict resolution skills. Kind of a no shit. And it's important, you guys. If I don't have the skills, where and how am I expecting my kids to? Try to understand the impact that it's having on them, and outside of our previous resentments toward our own kids, outside of our times that we didn't get the repair, that they didn't take accountability, that we are just staring daggers into these kids' faces like, what the fuck? Right? There's going to be so many of these times that prevent that within us. It does within me, for damn sure. There are plenty of times that I do not want to let myself apologize and take accountability because I am just so disappointed and deeply discontented by the way that they're behaving. And I don't want to give them the apology. I don't know that they even deserve it in those moments. And our children are going to be adults way longer than they are kids. And so we need to be the ones who show them how to do this anyway, who can see the bigger picture of how much we mean to each other, that we don't get bogged down by the pettiness in between. Right? Nobody pulls out my inner petty like my kids do. It is insane. And that's oftentimes the barrier. That's oftentimes what keeps me from doing these things. And at the end of the day, when I consider it from their perspective, when I lead with that self-awareness, right? And it's not just internal self-awareness, it's external self-awareness of how I affect and how I am viewed by other people. This is where that comes in. If you were to kind of imagine yourself switching positions with your child and viewing yourself as if you're watching yourself from their eyes, almost through a mirror, would you want them to see that parent? And this isn't to shame you or to guilt you. This is instead to motivate you, to catalyze you toward something new and different. there have been plenty of times where I have kind of seen myself through my kids' eyes in the same way that I saw my parents. And sometimes that wasn't super ideal. There are so many times that we replicate these same exact patterns, behaviors that we absolutely despised in our parents. Not because we are shitty people, but because we haven't learned different. We're focusing so much on what we don't want to do and who we don't want to be that we don't know what we want to do and who we want to be. And this is where that starts. I want to be an emotionally safe human for my kids. I want my kids to respect me because I have earned it, not because I demand it. And really, respect that's demanded is really just compliance. It's not respect. This is what I want. I want that when they fuck up, when they get into big trouble, when, of course, something happens that's massive, I want them to say, holy shit, I need to call my mom. She'll know what to do. And not, holy shit, my mom can never find out about this. This is how we heal through this. We bring in our H. We teach emotional safety. We speak their language. We help them put words to the experience. I got frustrated. I got angry and I yelled. That was not okay. I am not going to apologize for feelings and for having them. I am going to apologize for what I did with them. We want to avoid using words within the anger family because they tend to tell us the extent to which I feel something, but not actually what I feel. So instead of me saying, I got frustrated and angry and I yelled, instead I can say, I was disappointed in your behavior and what I did with that was poor. I felt sad when you did X and this is why I yelled. And it doesn't make it okay. Just because I'm sad doesn't mean I get to yell. Right? When you headbutt me after I asked you to please stop jumping so many times and you hit me and I bled and I got pissed and I got loud, that is valid. I got hurt after I had already shared with you how to prevent that, and that disappointed me. So yes, this we still need to talk about, and what I did with that was not okay. Just because I'm in pain doesn't mean that I get to be loud with you. Right? We do not apologize for having feelings at all. We acknowledge that I have them and what I did with them was poor. We give them the language, the vocabulary to use. We provide them this literacy and then we validate what that must have been like for them. I can see that that made you sad. I can imagine I scared you, right? Like, were you feeling scared by the way that I reacted? I know I was big and loud. And so this is kind of what it can look like over time. Parents who repair after conflict are going to raise kids with higher self-esteem and lower anxiety. This is proven in the research, you guys. So let's say that's the scenario, right? Which actually just happened earlier today. My son headbutted me so hard after I had asked him repeatedly to please stop bouncing on the couch. And then he lost his balance and he ended up kind of bouncing right into my head, right into my mouth, really. And it immediately angered me. I immediately was pissed. It didn't even give me a second to think about it. And I kind of just moved him away from me. I didn't shove him. I didn't push him. I didn't harm him. But what I did was I showed upset quite largely. And then I got to repair, right? I got to take a second and say, okay. And I moved him from my body. And I said, that really hurt me. This is why I was asking you to please not jump. I know you were having fun and I know you didn't expect this to happen. And accidents don't happen on purpose. I do not allow people who harm me to be around me. And so if you are going to be doing things that I can see will harm me, I will not be letting you. I am sorry for the way that I shoved your body off of me. I'd imagine that that was scary. That felt aggressive to you, right? Right. Okay. Well, that I absolutely apologize for. And this is what I'm needing from you moving forward. What were you needing from me when you kept repeatedly bouncing on the couch? What were you needing from me that you felt like you weren't getting from me that prevented you from honoring what it is that I was asking? Do you need me to play with you? Do you need some attention? Do you want me to take some time with you? Tell me what you need. Children show us their needs through behaviors, not through words. They don't know how to sit down with you and say, hi, I'm feeling upset and I'm feeling ignored. Could you please come play with me? They might, but only after we give them all of this vocabulary and this coaching and this self-awareness and emotional intelligence in order to do that. So that is how we start it. There have been plenty of times that I have gotten really upset and I've gotten very loud with my kids, even used profanity and embarrassed myself in all reality. It is about going back and showing them the emotional safety of, I know how to take accountability where I have messed up. I'm not just going to say, well, you're the child and you made a mistake, so you carry all of that. No. If our dynamic is problematic, we are both problematic. And our kids are blank slates. They don't know these things unless we teach them them. You have to be the one to lead by example. I am not expecting you to not fuck up. I am just expecting you and begging of you to adopt the skills, to demand that you learn the skills so that you know how to repair after you inevitably mess up. That is part of it. Any expectation that you shouldn't is wildly inaccurate and setting everyone up for failure. So then we use that innovation. We rework our communication. We teach them how to name those feelings. Your head is down and your breathing kind of changed. Your face looks sad. Are you sad? What's going on for you? Right? Give them the emotional toolbox. Do you know what you would need to feel better? Children who learn emotional language by age 5 have better relationships as adults. That's it. Right? The Yale Emotional Intelligence Lab has taught us that. And also, I don't think it's that surprising. And we get to ask them what it is that they need from me. How would you have preferred that I handled that? Right? What more or less do you need from me moving forward? When I asked my kids this question, gosh, I wanted to say 6 months ago, but it's probably closer to a year ago now. I asked them, what more or less do you need from me? Just generally. I asked them this about twice a week, probably. And what they said was, we don't like when you get loud. And I said, okay, I hear you. And I'm going to be working on that. Do you want to know how? And they said, yes. And I said, okay, when I start to feel the anger rise in my chest, when I start to feel really frustrated and get to the point that I would yell, I will let you know that. I will come to you and say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is when I would normally yell. I'm needing you to really hear me. And if I am working on a part of myself to better our relationship, I also need you to do the same. And here is what I need from you. Let's implement new strategies. So instead of me saying from across the room to not stand on the dining room table, I will come to you in the dining room and say, hey, Bubba, I'm going to need you to get down off the table, right? There can be certain things that we do in order to innovate what it is that we do here. Over time, we build that fortitude. One-time apologies are not going to be enough. We have to provide consistent emotional safety. That's how we build trust. Teens whose parents validate their emotions show lower rates of anxiety and even rebellion because kids show their emotion, show their dissent, show their discomfort in behaviors, not in words. And rebellion is one of the top ways that we do that. Over time, we get to build that fortitude within us. That I know that I'm a safe person to apologize to, and my children are safe people to apologize to as well. We get to live within this level of reciprocity that shows that we are mutually respecting each other. We are mutually earning each other's trust. And this is where we start. Ultimately, we get to these points of transformation. We prepare them for adult conflict. Repair is going to teach them how to navigate conflict in their own relationships. And what some research out of Harvard has shown us is that parental consistency in repair predicts stronger parent-child relationships in the long term. There's less resentment, there's less comparison. When our children have children of their own, we are welcomed in instead of tolerated. When we see our children going down a bad path and we give them guidance, there's going to be less pushback, less rebellion, because they actually want to be like us. We're no longer doing the do as I say, not as I do, because I said so shit. We are showing them, leading by example, that this is what you do. And this is what I recommend for you. In the next week, I would like for you to model this in two ways. One, with any other adult in your life, if you can have your children present for it, that would be super ideal. And then two, with your child. So if we're taking in the first example, and if you have a partner within the home or a family member, start up a conversation similar to episode 21, where we talk about voicing complaints. And then practice that. You might even get heated and then need episode 22 for some guidance, right? But allow for them to see how you voice complaints. Don't go for the big things. Again, start small and build evidence that I can actually do this. Take the lowest of the low-risk scenarios that will allow for you to model this with the other adults in your life, as well as your kids. And again, remind them what it is that you're working on. You go to the people in your life, your kids, and you say, hey, I know that I tend to get defensive when I get upset. I tend to blame when I get upset, anything like this. And I am really working on that. Here's how I'm hoping to do that. So you might hear complaints from me more often because I don't want them to continue building up over time. And I'm also working on remedying some of these within me before I have to get to the point that I typically get to. So that first one is allowing for repair within any of your adult relationships. Go through, take accountability, recognize your role in this, and then determine what you need to do differently and request of them what you need differently from them. If you can have your child present, even better. If things get hot, that's okay. Just be mindful of the way that you behave, of course, in front of them, and then you get to show them repair. With your kids, as you argue with them, as you're disappointed in them, as you act outside of yourself and then live within this regret and just cry alone in your room after they go to sleep, when that happens, go to them the next day. Again, this isn't 51st dates. They're not going to wake up and magically forget. You go to them and say, hey, I've been thinking about it, our argument last night. Do you remember what that was about? Okay, let me explain to you what that was for me, what came up for me. Here's what upset me. Here's what I was feeling and where that came from. Here's why that's valid. Here's what I did that was not good. And here's what I'm going to need differently from you later and what I am going to do differently later as well. And we can work collaboratively, right, to prevent these flare-ups from happening. It is never too late to go back and take accountability and repair something. You just have to have the tools and the willingness to do it effectively. What my husband and I did when we were first starting to get comfortable with this, even if we argued big in private, we wouldn't repair in private. We would repair in front of our kids and we would go to them and say, hey, Papa and I, we got into that argument earlier about the dishes. Do you remember that? Yeah. Okay, great. So Papa and I are going to talk this through and we just want you to be here with us. Are you comfortable? Yes, I'm comfortable. Okay, great. Papa, I recognize that the way that I said the comment about the dishes wasn't super nice. I know that that was disrespectful and I can imagine you felt really sad and judged by me. Right. Okay. Here's where I was coming from. And I also recognize that that wasn't fair to you. That wasn't kind to you. And so I'm going to work on presenting those things in a different way. Can you remind me when it comes up? Can you let me know next time when this happens if it seems like I'm not aware of myself? And in the future, are you open to changing XYZ about the way that these dishes happen, whatever the topic is, right? And then our kids get to see it in real time. Do not argue in front of them and repair in private, you guys. It needs to, at the very least, be the opposite, where you argue in private, even though they can probably hear you through walls, and then in front of them, you show them the repair. Please remember that conflict is a doorway. It's not an ending. It doesn't mean a relationship is failing. It's an opportunity for deeper understanding, trust, connection. There is no downside here, you guys. Whether it's with a partner, a coworker, a family member, or your child, repair isn't about being perfect. Again, it's about being consistent and intentional. If repairing conflict with your child, with your partner, in front of your child, or just within your day-to-day dynamic, and you also happen to be a parent, the parental shift is designed for that. To navigate these tough moments with confidence, with clarity, and deeper connection. That's why we are doing this.
We have a waitlist going right now. I will link it down in the show notes. Please join us. It's non-obligatory. You can always change your mind later. It really just means that you're going to be added to these emails that will give you more information. We're also running a pilot, and so we'll likely have the first 30 days completely free. I just need you to come in and join us, tell me what's working, tell me what's not, and all of us can benefit from each other. As always, this is all about your empowerment, one shift at a time. If you need me, you know where to find me. Stay steady, and I will see you next time.